Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts.
Very pleased to be joined here in just a moment by a legend of the game, been in the game for a long time now in this industry. Tony Barnhart is Mr. College Football. Mr. College Football is Tony Barnhart. He's on X very conveniently at Mr. College Football. Tony, how is it going? Good to talk with you.
Oh, it's going great. I just can't believe it's time to get started again. Right. But after a summer of talking about everything but football, I'm ready to talk about some football on the field. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I am just about sick of it, Tony. I know you are. And I, you know, we'll get to the changing landscape from when you got into the game to where we're at now as it pertains to sort of prognosticating. But you will be at Memphis Touchdown Club coming up next Monday. I've told the people out there to get their tickets at memphistdclub.com over at the Hilton Memphis. 6 p.m. is when the event gets going, and you can get dinner and drinks. And then Tony will be up there with our guy Harold Grader before long. And get this, Tony, this is the first time for my show, the Gabe Kuhn Show. Well, among the things that get auctioned off, you've done this before. Among the things that get auctioned off before the meeting itself, it looks like we are going to be auctioning off a guest spot on my show your week. So on Monday, we're gonna see if people drive up the price to get on the Gabe Kuhn Show or not. So my ego will either be fed or absolutely killed. I mean, there's no in between, right?
No, there is no in between. I mean, you'll do well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the AP Top 25 came out today. I have never really gotten your take on your feeling on preseason polls. Obviously, as a player, we didn't think it was worth the paper it was written on, but sometimes it's right, sometimes it's not. I think when you look at last year's AP poll, I saw this, 12 teams ended up unranked that were in the AP preseason mm-hmm. poll. So what's your take on the poll season before the season, before we actually play games?
Well, it's okay to do them as long as you understand what they are and what they are not. What they are is just some place to begin a conversation. That way we have something to talk about when we get on the air today. But if you spend too much time thinking about these are accurate, no, they're not. That's just somebody's best guess, based on what they have returning and what changes have they made and things of that nature. It's all this educated guess, but this is supposed to be fun, and so that we can talk about it.
Yeah. Now we'll get to that. I'm curious. You've been in the game a long time, right? And this is when I bring up the year, I'm not trying to do anything other than preface this question. You've been in the game since the late 70s, early 80s, and dealing with these types of polls. And nowadays, it's a lot different. I mean, for example, I know University of Memphis is not a Power 4 school that would get ranked in the AP Top 25, but they had 71 new players, Tony. 71 new players.
Only 71.
Only, exactly. From year to year. How much more difficult is it to prognosticate, to figure out what these teams are year to year? You look for continuity, but continuity is kind of hard to find these days.
It is, and basically it is all a guess. You're just going to guess and do the best you can. Or you could do the old plan that we used to do when I was a student at the University of Georgia, just go play darts, shut your eyes, and throw it at the board. And that wherever it lands. And so, don't think that there's some scientific way to go about this logically and put data point. No. Just guess, because that's what you're doing.
Yeah, so with the AP preseason top 25, I want to just sort of put the ball in your court instead of just breaking down the rankings and who's ranked too high, who's ranked too low. Who are you high on that could be perceived as an AP top 25 team? Who are you lower on going into the season?
Well, my first, I do an early poll for the Football Writers Association. And I've got Texas, Oregon, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Now, I think Notre Dame is loaded, and they've got an embarrassing schedule. I did a talk in my church over the weekend, and a buddy of mine's a Notre Dame guy. I said, you ought to be ashamed playing that schedule. I mean, come on. Are you kidding me? But that's my top four. And here's the thing about I haven't seen the AP poll. I saw the coaches poll last week. I've been traveling today. But, you know, in last week's coaches poll, you had like six of the top 11 teams were SEC teams. Mm-hmm. You know, and what that tells you is that there may not be a great team in the SEC, but there are a lot of really good ones who are capable of winning the SEC championship. So that's kind of the way that I look at it.
So you brought up Texas number one, and my producer Connor here will tell you I have been banging that same drum, Tony, because I don't know what your take was last year going into the season about Texas, but I thought it was overkill. Oh, Arch Manning's the favorite to win the Heisman. Their favorite to win the national title. They opened up on the road at Ohio State. I knew that would be a rough outing. But going into this year, I feel like, and I want to get your take on this, I kind of feel like we're overcorrecting at least a little bit. I know they're a top five team. I understand that. But when you look at the talent on both sides of the ball, Colin Simmons may be the number one overall edge selected off the board in the NFL draft mm-hmm. coming up. You have four, maybe five guys on the offensive side of the ball, Arch Manning, Trevor Goosby, both the wide receivers, that could be first-round picks in the National Football League. So, like, I look at the talent on that team, and I feel like because of last year's disappointment, we're overcorrecting when that team has, seemingly, and Arch Manning specifically, the experience to do what the expectations were last year.
Well, one of the things they talked about at Texas, the powers that be, they said, you know, we got a generational quarterback who played well down the stretch. I talked to Arch Manning this summer, and I talked for a while, and this is the best he's felt in a couple of years, he told me. And so the thinking there was you got a generational quarterback, and you need to surround him with as many good players as you can. And then, son of a gun, no faster than you can say $40 million roster,
yep.
They are. And they have a whole lot of talent surrounding Arch. And so we'll see how they do. Well, let's talk again after they play Ohio State.
Yes.
We'll be a lot smarter then, okay?
Yes, yes. Now, you brought up a $40 million roster, another team in college football with a new head coach that may or may not be the subject of a lot of hit pieces lately would be LSU and Lane Kiffin. They have a reported $40 million roster. They came in at 11 in the AP poll, I think 13 in the coaches poll. But I have been asking this question as much as possible this offseason, and you get like at least a different answer, slightly different answer from whoever you ask. What do you think success is for Lane Kiffin with that amount of money, with that amount of investment at LSU this year? What should be the expectation, and what can he not fall short of, I guess would maybe be another way of asking it.
Got to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Just don't have to win it. But you got to make the playoffs. You've got too much talent on that roster. And so it's going to be tough because the stuff I read about LSU is it's not like they're going to blow people away, but they do have a good team. So here's the key. They cannot lose to somebody they're supposed to beat.
Yeah.
And particularly in a first-year situation because the LSU folks got on board with all of that money with one idea in mind. At the very least, they would make the playoffs and maybe make it to the national championship game. So we'll see.
Yeah, and then another team that's kind of polarizing, even though, like, you know, there's still a top 15 team wherever you look. Alabama coming mm-hmm. off of a CFP win, and I know people down Kalen DeBoer, but it's weird. Like, it's a rare case where the national media just goes after this guy for the Saban expectations when I think in town and certainly behind the closed doors, he got an extension this offseason. It seems like they're pretty happy with him. They think they're growing at least in the right direction. But new quarterback in Keelan Russell, new mm-hmm. offensive line, they have to start running the ball. I think you and I both know that. Alabama, what's your thought on what they'll be this year?
It's kind of funny. I mean, you think about it, Alabama wins a playoff game. They make and all of a sudden they're looking, you know, pretty good. Then they sort of stumble down the stretch, but out of it he gets a contract extension with a $70 million buyout. I would say life's looking pretty good for him.
Right.
So, but they play some tough games early. We'll see. And first of all, the expectations at Alabama are always unrealistic. Mm-hmm. The words realistic expectations and Alabama do not go in the same sentence together. And I think Kalen DeBoer's a really good coach. We'll see how they play early on, but there's just so many good teams in the SEC. You need to be on. You need to have your A game going every single week. But we'll see. You know, my man Feinbaum is already questioning whether or not he's got the gravitas to win a national championship. And well, that's the great thing about playing the games. And hey, Nick, this year we love it so much we're going to play 9 conference games instead of 8. I mean, is this a great country or what?
And that's what I was going to get into right there. How? I know it changes the way we view overall records and strength of schedule and when it comes to committee time for the CFP, but how much do you think it's going to be sort of put into the minds of everybody in that committee room? Hey, the SEC went to 9 games this year, right? Mm-hmm. How much do you think it changes how we view teams in the SEC? Does a 9-3, if you win the right games, get you in? Does an 8-4, maybe we'd have to get to 16 or 20 before we start talking about that. But you get the gist of what I'm saying. How much does it change how we view SEC teams?
Oh, a lot of people. Like, listen, I have said all summer long, I do a bunch of speeches in the summertime, and this will be the year that a 3-loss team will make the college football playoff. The odds are that it will be from the SEC. And is there pressure on the committee? You better believe there's pressure on the committee. This has been about a 2-year effort from the SEC trying to get the committee to realize that a 9-game conference schedule from the SEC is different than a 9-game conference schedule from the Big 12 or the ACC. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And so, and here's the thing. The coaches aren't real happy right now because they were told, you know, going in and said, hey, if you let us go to 9 conference games, then we'll expand the playoff, and that'll make you happy and give you a better chance of making the playoffs. Well, guess what? Yeah, they did go to 9-game conference, but they still 9-game conference schedule, but they're still playing. They still got a 12-team playoff, and the coaches are not real thrilled about that.
Now, this is an idea I've brought up in the off season, and you would be the guy to bring this up with the view of Greg Sankey within at least the coaching ranks or program to program institution ranks. In the Southeastern Conference. We know he's always acted in the best interest of the SEC, and he's done a good job of it. I mean, he really has had an unbelievable tenure after Mike Slive as the SEC commissioner. Landed a big TV deal with ESPN, eyeballs always on the product on a consistent basis. There's a lot of good things he's done, but to me, the 9-game SEC schedule not coinciding with an expansion to 16 in the CFP is very much a misstep, a public misstep, I think, from Greg Sankey and the higher-ups in the SEC. So what do you think sort of the relationship is at the current moment between the institution, maybe coaches, presidents, chancellors, and Greg Sankey himself having made this decision?
I think their relationship is just fine. When they look at their bottom line and see how much college football has grown in the SEC and what the value is. I think that now are they happy with it? No, but you know what? You got to put on your big boy pants and go to work. And hey, maybe this year they don't get 5 teams in the playoffs. Maybe it's 4. But there will event will at some point be an adjustment of the number of teams that are in the playoff. But right now it's not looking like they got a December 1 deadline to make a decision about 2027. And if they don't make that decision, guess what? It'll be 12 in 2027.
Yeah, and you know what does frustrate me is we're starting these CFP talks right back up as the season's going to get going. And, you know, that's going to sort of perpetuate throughout the season. And I know you and I, we just want to talk some ball. Now, the Big Ten has had a nice timeshare there in the national title, and certainly with the winners, 3 in a row. And the SEC hasn't even gotten a team in those 3 years into the national title. Now, by no stretch of the imagination, I'm going to say the SEC is a weak conference, or the Big Ten is without question better. I think the top end of the Big Ten is certainly better as per what we see at the end of the year every year. But this year was interesting with the AP poll. It's the first time since 2015 where not a single SEC school got a first-place vote. Mm-hmm. With the dynamics of the Big Ten sort of taking off, and the SEC is still good, but they're not good enough to get over the hump with any particular team, what is your take on why that's happening, what we're seeing, and how is it going to be lasting? Do you think there are lasting effects to what we're seeing with that dynamic?
Well, let's start there first. There are no lasting effects of anything in college football.
Right.
There's no such thing as a lasting. It's what are you doing this week,
yep,
or what are you doing this year? And that's where they face. Yeah, I think there's been a lot of adjustments in college football. The transfer portal, more people putting more money. Indiana. Yep. I mean, really, Indiana. And they may be in the mix again this year. So I just think the game has evolved. But good for the Big Ten. And listen, the SEC pounded their chest, and rightfully so, for 7, 8, 9 years, and they were always in the mix, and now somebody else gets a chance. So that's – I have no trouble with that.
Yeah, but, I mean, is it this – obviously it's a combination of factors, but how big of a factor do you think – NIL is and alumni being able to pay back? Like, do you think the Big Ten just has a bit, at least the top of the Big Ten has an advantage there, or are we reading into it too much when we make statements like that?
You're reading way, yep, too much into it. It's just the key to the whole thing is how do you manage your roster from year to year? Given what's available, the transfer portal, NIL, all that, how do you manage your? Because one thing I learned a long time ago, and I was certainly shocked to hear this, I had a coach tell me, he said, Tony, you'll find once you've been in this business for a little while, the team with the best players usually wins.
Right.
And that's a fact. You have access to, you can now build teams quicker and better than you could before. And who's good at managing that? And that those are the teams that are going to win in the future.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, when it comes to the southeastern part of the country or wherever you're at in the country, California, you see California recruits come down to the SEC all the time. This sort of geographical stronghold that the SEC used to have on that area, they still have a stronghold on it, but some of those guys escape. Some of those guys get to Oregon. Some of those guys get to Ohio State, and you're just seeing, I think, the fruits of that a little bit more in the NIL era.
Well, think about this. You know, why would a guy from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, go to Oregon? Well, one thing I've learned over the last 10 or 15 years covering this, doesn't matter what the question is, the answer is money. And to me, that is the key. You have guys that would move and leave their home geography to go play in another part of the country. Why? Because you're going to pay them more money.
Yeah.
And the players get spread out, and you don't have to be on, you don't have to be in the SEC to get a lot of television. So it's more, let's just say the wealth has been spread around,
yes,
a lot better.
Yes.
Than the past.
Yep. And places like Indiana and Vanderbilt are definitely showing that. Now, on Indiana, if we're ranking coaches, because I saw a bunch, list season was a month ago, 2 months ago. If you're starting a college football list of coaches, can you start it with anybody other than Kurt Cignetti right now? I know it's only been 2 years at Indiana, but do you think you can really rationalize after what we saw last year, putting anybody, any name over him at the top of the sport?
Well, there's no question that he's at the top of the sport. And with Nick Saban retired, that's absolutely. I think Kirby Smart is a close second. I just think what Indiana has done has been a tremendous benefit to college football because now there's hope.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things about college football. No matter, there were situations where I don't care what you do, you're not getting in the playoffs. You're not winning a national championship. But now people can say, look, if Indiana can do it, Indiana, which at some point was the losingest team in the history of college football, I think Northwestern jumped them, that was impossible. Now you have hope is a very, very powerful thing to sell, and that's what Indiana has done.
Yeah. Now, I want to get around sort of our listening area and see what you have to say about each particular team. Tennessee, I'm a little higher on the Vols than normal people, but where are you at on Tennessee heading into the season? Obviously, quarterback battle needs to play out between George McIntyre and Faison right. Brandon, the young five-star. But they certainly have some talent in the offensive line room and the skill positions. I think that much is apparent when you look at their depth chart.
Yeah, and Josh Heupel is a very underrated coach. I mean, the guy, when he's got the quarterback that's working for him, he is a tough out. And so I think Tennessee is not in that first, to my mind, they're not in that first tier of teams that includes, you know, Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, maybe Alabama. They're not in that tier, but they're close at the top of the next tier.
Yeah. Now Ole Miss, they came in at number 9 in the AP poll today. Trinidad Chambliss and Kawan Lacey, for my money, is the best quarterback running back duo in the country. Mm-hmm. And I think most people would agree with that. Where you at on Ole Miss? Can they recreate the magic they had last year?
I said as long as Trinidad Chambliss was vertical, they are a top 10 team, maybe a top 5 team. And you mentioned Kawan Lacey. Oh my goodness. That child can play football. And so I like what they're doing. I can't wait for LSU to come to Oxford. I mean, my goodness, that's going to be a wild, wild night. But Ole Miss can beat, if their players are healthy, they can beat anybody on their roster, on their schedule. And so again, you got, you know, Pete Golding, now it's all real, okay? He takes over at the end of the year. And now everything is real, and now you got to start winning. You can't lose to somebody you're supposed to beat. Just don't do that, because if that happens, people say, "Well, I guess that guy's not really that good after all." So, and you don't want that.
Yep. Now Mississippi State is an interesting one. They showed improvement last year, but I think State fans are a little more hungry this year. And there's one name that keeps coming back up: Kamario Taylor. That's the name I keep hearing. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see that guy play.
I've heard nothing but good things. I think Jeff Levy was one of the best play callers out there, and so I think they've got a chance to make some noise. But you know what? There are a lot of really good teams ranked ahead of them that they're going to have to beat. That's why this conference is going to be so hard. I mean, you could have teams that have improved significantly from a year ago and not win as many football games. And I think you're going to be facing that this year a lot.
And potentially one of those teams is the last one I'll bring up: Arkansas, with my former offensive line coach Ryan Silverfield, former Memphis head coach Ryan Silverfield. It's going to be a tough job, and I don't think anyone is doubting that. I have heard on multiple occasions they're not bottom two, they're bottom one when it comes to funding for their football program. Maybe that's a little bit of the Cal effect. Maybe that's just sort of a lot of years of futility. But Ryan, I think the better question for Ryan in year one is, like, how do you measure success? Because I think what you said may sort of be the moral of the story here. They may be a better team, but I don't think that'll show up in wins or losses. They have right now the number one ranked strength of schedule, hardest strength of schedule in the country.
So a struggling team with the worst schedule, toughest schedule in the country. That is a recipe for success right there. No, I think Coach Cyril Fields has done a really good job, but facts are facts. This has got to be a year where you get your program established. What do we believe in? What do we want to do? You're not going to go out and get a whole bunch of really good extra players. So this is about playing well, looking like a well-coached team, being a well-coached team, and being competitive in just about every game you play.
Yep, and that's a fan base who needs to see some progress, and I'll tell you what progress equals: more bucks in your pocket to spend on talent in the offseason. So we'll see. I think that's something big for Ryan to try to get unlocked. I think he brought up Walmart at SEC Media Days, trying to get them more involved. So we will see what the future holds for Arkansas in the 26-27 season. But you will be at the Memphis Touchdown Club coming up on Monday. I can't wait. Can't wait to make the introduction. And we will see you then. Tony, I appreciate it.
All right. Enjoyed it. Take care.
Yes, sir. He is Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, at Mr. College Football on X. Been doing this thing since the late 70s, early 80s. He's been around college football for a long time, and when he throws out those prognostications of these local teams, make sure you heed that advice. But Memphis Touchdown Club, you can go get the tickets for Monday's show with Tony at memphistdclub.com, and you'll even have a chance, like I said, to throw in on the auction to get a guest spot on the show. Hopefully we get it bid up, though, a little bit, Connor. Not a very egotistical guy, but I need a little bit of boost, you know, every once in a while.
You got to plant people in the audience just in case.
Yeah.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Deanna Roga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.